Welcome to our podcast. We are informationally entertaining. This is the
Vet. Well, that's subjective.
This is the Vet Unleashed, unattached and untethered to any professional organizations.
These people have been listening to you for 3 episodes, but I have been listening to you for 25 years.
Technically, they've only been listening to me for 2 episodes. This is the 3rd episode.
Oh, we'll see if they hit play.
I know. And in 25 years, you haven't learned to count to 3.
I've definitely counted to 25, though. So it's good that they have a turn listening to these stories because I've heard them all for 25 years and I'm done.
This is Dr. Barak Ben-Arie. I'm here today with Sarah Wheeler, licensed veterinary technician. Okay, we're going to launch right into it, Sarah.
Okay. So this is going to reveal how immature I am, like that these are the things that I find funny. So
I'm not sure that mine are more mature. So our plan is to surprise each other here.
Yeah.
So actually, neither one of us knows what the other is going to say. We each picked our 3 favorite amusing topics that we think are funny in the vet world.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to hit each other with it. So yeah, why don't you go first,
okay,
Sarah?
My first topic is Sertoli cell tumors.
Wow, that's hilarious.
Thanks. It's just such a strange disease. So let me give a little bit of the backstory of what this is. So Sertoli cells are found in the testicles, and they specifically are to protect the sperm cells as they form because the body will mount an immune response against them. If the dog isn't neutered and these Sertoli cells kind of multiply and form a tumor, they actually have a small amount of estrogen in them. So it bombards the dog's body with estrogen. Mm-hmm. And I wrote down what my textbook said because it's just ridiculous. So it literally said the prepuce becomes pendulous. But basically, the mammary glands enlarge and they can even lactate. And other male dogs may even be attracted to the affected animal as if it were a female in heat.
I like how funny you find this.
I know.
You really find this hysterically funny.
I don't know why I think this is so funny. Because one day you'll just look down and be like, what happened to my male dog?
The dogs become feminized. But you know the number one dog that gets that, right?
No, what?
It's undescended testicle.
Right.
Called cryptorchid. So when the testicle is in an abnormal environment in the abdomen, it's exposed to abnormal temperatures, then it's more likely to become a Sertoli cell tumor.
Right. So you might even think that you have a neutered male dog, and then one day your dog starts to transform
into a female
dog. And I think that must be just like that would blow my mind if that happened to me.
Yeah. It's really, really rare.
Have you come across any of those?
Maybe once or twice in my entire career. I mean, dogs can also get mammary cancer.
Right.
Male dogs, which do the same thing. They feminize them. Okay, that's topic number 1.
Yeah, that was it. Just, I don't know. And then I remember reading it in my textbook that they lactate, and I was like trying to Google it later, and there's nothing on the internet that says that they lactate. So I thought I had given myself a Berenstain Bears complex of just being like, did I really read that? But I checked it, and yeah, they can totally.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I don't even know if I don't think I knew that they lactate.
It was one of those, like, you know how in textbooks they have like a little tiny box blurb of something? So I'm not sure if that's exactly true. And I don't know why that's so funny to me.
That is funny. Your topic number 1 fits a little bit more with my topic number 2.
Okay.
And so now I'm almost considering making my topic number 2 topic number 1. So I'm going to flip-flop. I'm doing it. I'm going for it, Sarah.
Go for it.
Let's go. Because topic number 2 to me are my favorite medical words.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a little bit of an obsession with this, which I think you probably know.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
Yes. And so I just love certain terms. So
yeah.
I'm just going to go through them.
Yeah.
There's the canals of Schlemm.
Right.
And the canals of Schlemm are...
Is that the nerve one or is that
in the eyes?
In the eyes.
Yeah, that's just a normal anatomical structure.
Right.
In the eyes. It rhymes like with phlegm. It's the canals of phlegm.
Poor Dr. Schlemm who...
Who discovered that. I know.
But...
He's forever remembered for the canals of Schlemm.
For his Schlemm.
Yeah. The other one are the islets of Langerhans. Who discovered that? Is that where he's from? Like somewhere off of the coast of Ireland?
So is that... That's not really off the
coast. That's an anatomical structure in the pancreas. Oh, the right. Islets of Langerhans. Right. I don't know. Why did he name it that?
I don't know.
They?
Probably a male doctor.
Oh, almost certainly a male doctor. Yes.
I think all the things named after vets are...
By the way, we're very much moving away from diseases named after doctors.
Yes.
So we try not to call it Cushing's anymore. We say hyperadrenocorticism. Yeah. They all name these diseases after themselves. Another word I like is Somogyi.
Somogyi is a good one.
That's definitely named after Dr. Somogyi. He discovered it.
Really?
That's a problem with diabetics.
Yeah.
They go the too effect. Low and then they spike and go too high. Yeah. So you check their blood sugar. You think it's too high. You think they need more insulin, but actually they're Somogying.
Yeah.
And they need less insulin.
Which is something that we'll come across because when we do blood glucose curves, normally you test like every 2 hours.
In theory, if you test every 2 hours, you won't miss a Somogyi. Oh. But if you test less frequently than every 2 hours, you might miss a Somogyi. Oh, okay. But these days we have those buttons. With diabetics now, we almost never do curves anymore. We put a little button on them.
Yeah.
It's $35 at the pharmacy and it will monitor the blood sugar 24/7.
Yeah.
And you might only get a couple of days out of it, but it's so much more information.
Yeah.
Borborygmia.
Yeah.
Borborygmia is just
I was going to say that one.
Stomach noises.
It's just such a fancy way to say it too. Like, why did we even have to name that? But it's,
why can't you just say stomach noises?
Yeah, exactly. But no, Borborygmia.
We had an instructor in veterinary school who used to assign dollar values to words. And so he would say, if you say that word, then you get to, we don't actually do this just to be clear, charge more in the exam.
Oh, yeah.
So if you use the word borborygmia, you get to up your charges because you use fancy words. And so he would say, this is a $10 word. This is a $15 word.
Yeah.
Of course, that was 26 years ago. So borborygmia now, it's probably like a $35 word.
Oh, I bet.
And it's really gone up in value.
Which, what do you even do to treat that? It's just a thing. Yeah,
just like your dog
just like a natural
borborygmia sounds. Yeah.
It just
except I would say I never use it in the exam room because I would think it has the reverse effect.
Yeah.
I think you can probably charge $35 less because they figure you're kind of a conceited prick.
Right. I would never use it. I just use it for fun.
That's my topic number two.
Oh, I have a couple more words to add.
Oh, let's go. Let's go.
I really love epididymis, which epididymis fits back into my first
You seem to have
topic.
A certain anatomical area that we're focusing
that
on today.
I just it's funny. I don't know. I'm just immature and that stuff is funny.
Yeah. And you can get epididymitis.
Yes. Which is inflammation of the epididymis.
Correct. By the way, itis. The word itis just means inflammation for those of you listening out there. Anything you add itis to, it just means so gastritis, cholangitis, hepatitis. All itis means is inflammation. Right. That's it. Let's go to your topic number two, Sarah.
Okay. Topic number two in one sentence is cows can get the clap.
Okay.
Learned that in school, I don't know why I didn't think that that was, it never crossed my mind that other animals get venereal diseases until we learned about them. And it's actually really, kind of devastating to, not devastating, maybe that's not the word, but it's something that, you know, cattle breeders are really aware of and mindful of because it affects the breeding of the cows so much.
And dogs get venereal diseases too.
Dogs do too.
In fact, dogs have their venereal disease is sort of fascinating from a medical point of view. Transmissible venereal tumor is the only, there are only two, to my knowledge, there are only two forms of transmissible cancer. Transmissible venereal tumor is one that's a form of transmissible cancer.
Right.
It's very rare to be able to actually have cancer and give it. And the other form of transmissible cancer is, what are those creatures in Australia?
Kangaroos?
No, the crazy ones, the ones that spin around.
Tasmanian devils?
That's
in Tasmania. That's part of Australia.
Is that part of Australia or not?
Good thing this is not a geography podcast. We never claimed to know anything about geography, by the way.
So the Tasmanian devil has a type of cancer that is actually transmissible from Tasmanian devil to Tasmanian devil, and it's wiping them out.
Oh.
It's a devastating disease to them.
And also, as far as like funny things, like we don't necessarily think this is funny when we see dogs with diseases and stuff like that. This is just, you have to have some sense of humor in this field. But I have a little bit more information about cow venereal disease. So technically, I actually had to look up what the clap was, which is gonorrhea, because I didn't know that that's what that was. I don't think people say the clap anymore. But there's two main types. There's Campylobacter foetus, which is also called Vibrio, and Trichomonas fetus, which is also trich. Did you, because at one point you had wanted to maybe pursue being
a dairy vet.
A dairy vet. Did you learn about that stuff?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so it's been a long time. Though, sure. But yes. Yeah.
It's hard to diagnose, and this is how you diagnose it. Serial scraping of the prepuce of the bull.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
How on earth do you do that? How on earth do you achieve that? And like, whose job is that? Like, do you just...
Without the bull...
Yeah. How do you scrape a bull's prepuce?
You have safely to be mighty brave.
For days in a row.
Not safely, no. I would say.
Man, I gotta go scrape the bull again. Yeah. I'm really not looking forward to this. Yeah. Like, that guy wakes up in the morning is just like, oh God, I gotta go. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go into work today.
Yeah, working with bulls is terrifying. I guess now is topic number two.
Yeah.
Is dead or not dead, which doesn't sound funny.
Is this a Schrodinger riddle? Yes.
So several times, I think you've been party to a couple of these. Oh, okay. So one was many years ago, people brought in a dog. It was a family. They wanted to know why their dog died. It was in the bag. They put the bag on the table.
A plastic, like a trash bag?
A trash bag, okay. Tied. And while they were crying and talking to me, I could see the trash bag moving. And so I tore through the bag and the dog popped out of the bag. He wasn't dead.
You're such a good vet. You just brought that dog back to life.
We're not going to compare me to a certain someone who did a similar thing. So the dog had had a syncopal episode. He had heart disease and he had passed out, fainted. He had bad heart disease. I ended up sending them to a cardiologist. The dog died about 7 or 8 months later. So it wasn't a good thing, but at least he wasn't buried alive.
Yeah, it could have been worse. That's not a great way to go.
That was one. The other one, I'm not sure if you were there for when the woman called us and said that her dog had died. Could we come get the dog? She lives with a family, her son and his kids. Yeah. And she was home with a family dog. And he died. I had to call her son, who was an adult. He was away with his kids. It was his elderly mother. And tell him the dog had died. And he asked me, could we come get the dog? Mm-hmm. And so I sent one of our technicians the dead dog from her house. And the tech told me he knew right away something was wrong because he walked into the house and the woman said, well, that's strange because he was dead in the living room, but now he's dead in the kitchen.
Oh.
And so he said he walked over and kind of shook the dog and the dog just looked up at him. And then he called me and he said, what do I do? And I said, bring the dog to us.
Yeah,
I think the dog should stay in boarding with us. And I called up her son and I said, listen, I think when your mother can't tell the difference between a dead dog and an alive dog, I'm not sure that she should really be house-sitting your dog right now. So we kept the dog in boarding until they got home. Another one that happened to me, this has actually happened quite a number of times. I have a bunch, but I had to kind of pick my favorite of them. Was the woman who left me a message. So I sedated a dog.
Yeah.
The dog was lame, and so we sedated it to get x-rays.
Yeah.
And it had bad arthritis and hip dysplasia, and was routine. Sedated the dog, sent the dog home. I get a message the next morning, and the first message is the woman saying, well, we'll just call the dog Scout.
Sure.
Scout died. He's dead in my house, and I don't know what to do.
Oh, my gosh.
She was not upset with me. She said, thank you, Dr. Benarier. I know you tried. We just couldn't save him and he's died and I need to know what to do with his body. Can you call me when you get in to let me know what to do with the body? Beep. So I'm heartbroken. Right. This is horrible.
That's a terrible thing to come into in the morning.
Yeah. Luckily, there's an immediate message after this. It goes, beep. Hi, Dr. Benarier. I called my son Scott to help me move Scout's body. And Scout actually took treats from him and perked up and seems to be doing better now. So there's no need to call me back. He's okay. Now, mind you, that easily has taken like a year off my life. Yeah. I'm under the impression that I've somehow killed her dog. And the next message tells me I don't need to call her at all because he's fine. He's taking treats.
And it's just in the same tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. He's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
No need to be concerned.
That's happened more than once.
I'm sure.
yeah. where people have thought their dog was dead.
Yeah.
So one woman called me the same on the phone. She told me her dog was dead and was crying. And then literally before I could answer, she said, oh no, he's okay now.
Oh my gosh.
So sadly, I've had the opposite. We won't talk about those because yeah. those are not as happy.
Yeah.
But that one's kind of a crazy one when yeah. people don't actually realize that their pet is deceased.
Right. No.
That one's not a happy one.
No.
So we'll stick with a happier
yeah.
version.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Where they live.
There's always too, it happens to us at work too, that especially for me after surgery, when I go and check on a patient and they're not breathing and it's just like, it's in reality, it's only a second, mm-hmm. but in my brain, it's been so many seconds. I've already played through how I'm going to, you know, rip this dog from the cage and hook back up to anesthesia, the oxygen. And then they take a breath and I'm like, Oh my gosh.
How we've all had that.
Yeah.
We've all
but your
that.
Heart you just by, like you plummets.
By, you walk by a dog and they just seem too still for you.
Yeah.
And then that's another, it's they're waking up from surgery.
Yeah.
They're doing really well. They're comfortable. They're sleeping well.
Yeah.
And then you kind of check on them. Now you startle them and you feel bad that you startled yeah. them. And so you never know where to sit with that one sometimes.
Oh, I'll shake them. I'll shake them awake.
No, the last scary. Dead or not dead was my uncle's story, which I also think you've heard before.
Oh, maybe.
That my uncle called me up and he said, I need to know if I have a bad veterinarian. And should I switch?
Okay.
And so his story was he brought his dog to the vet because the dog wasn't feeling well.
What state is this?
New York.
Okay. Just to paint
and
the picture.
The dog, the vet said, I'm going to take the dog to the back okay. to draw some blood on him.
Okay.
Dog's name is Andy. Takes the dog in back. My uncle says he hears a scream. The vet walks back out and says, I don't know how to tell you this, but Andy just died.
Oh my God.
And my uncle said, what do you mean he just died? And he said, Andy died.
What?
And my uncle said he was so distressed. He went outside, got in his car, shut the doors and just didn't know what to do. He called his wife and he said, Andy's dead. And his wife said, no, he's not. And he said, Andy's dead. And she said, no, he's not dead.
Okay.
And he said, Andy is dead, dead, dead. And then there was a knock on the window and it was his vet. And he thought, what now? And the vet, he rolled down the window and the vet said, Andy's not dead.
Okay.
Turns out he just lost consciousness. Same thing. Andy had a syncopal episode, yeah. just like the dog in the bag. Only the veterinarian didn't know he wasn't
right.
dead. And he's okay. You can come on in. We're okay now. We're just going to wait for some tests.
So
my uncle called me and he said, should I switch vets?
What was your advice?
What do you think my advice was?
Duh. yeah, if your own vet can't even tell if your dog's alive or not.
I feel like the ability to differentiate life from death it's pretty integral to the job that
I
we do.
I would say it's like a cornerstone of what
right.
you do.
That's the bare minimum you should ask of your vet. That's a fairly low bar.
You should have mastered that mm-hmm. skill.
Yeah, I would like to believe that. I'm not saying I've had a perfect career, I'm pretty sure that I've able to name life, and death.
Yes. Oh, wow.
All right. So that's our dead or not dead.
Okay.
All right, Sarah, hit me with the.
Okay. So this is a little bit of an insider into the industry topic.
Okay.
And we're kind of making fun of ourselves a little bit.
I like it.
So a lot of us will do our vets always have to do CE and then I have to do CE because I'm licensed. And so we'll go to these conventions where there are just a lot of topics about veterinary medicine. Sometimes the names of these classes are just so either dumb or cringy or sometimes just plain funny. Like it's obvious that person has a sense of humor. So I wrote down some of the names of the classes or the seminars at conventions that stood out to me. This is from the last one that we went to in Vegas, the Western Vet Conference.
Picking a topic for these is not, as someone who speaks in these conferences, choosing your topic name is a tricky one.
Yeah.
Because you want to attract an audience. And so you need it to be a little catchy.
Yeah, you do.
Let's hear what you got.
Okay. So brain dead fat cats.
Nice.
Enriching cats' lives. I like that one. And some of them are just so cringe. Can't touch this. Employee paycheck deductions and the law.
Oh, that sounds
but
fascinating.
What does that even?
I don't even know where that
comes
from.
Why would that sink in with don't, can't touch this?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Don't be shell-shocked to see a reptilian patient.
Ooh, that is really clever.
This one is time to bask in the limelight, L-Y-M-E, 21st century tick-borne disease prevention.
Right.
Oh my gosh.
Good one.
Monkeypox, COVID-19, rabbit fever, WTH is going on. It actually says WTH.
Wow.
What the hell?
They couldn't do WTF, huh?
I guess not. But why did you even
in the
need
initials.
That? And then this one is also at every convention, there's always, always a play on lions and tigers and bears. Oh my. Pretty much at every convention.
It's funny that I go to these every year and I'm not sure that I've noticed that, but that's not.
There's at least two at Western this last year, but I only put my favorite one. No buts about it.
Oh, yeah.
B-U-T-T-S. Anal sacs, tail glands, and fistulas. Oh, my.
That's good.
Okay. What? They're just so weird.
Anal sacs. Just that one.
I know.
We don't even need to go further than just anal sacs.
I almost made that a topic.
Correct. I'm not sure it's appropriate for radio, but how often that seems to be misheard or misinterpreted.
Oh, that. I thought you just meant the act of expressing
that
anal glands.
That one too. Because anal gland expression.
That
yes.
Well, every few months or so, the act of expressing an animal's anal glands will entertain us in some form or fashion.
Yes.
Whether it gets on someone or it gets on the wall.
Yes. And we have a famous incident from our
yes,
clinic, which I'm sure Sarah, why don't you, what's your take on that famous incident? Because I've been given a very hard time for this famous incident.
I think I might be instigating why people give you a hard time about it. But the incident is when one of our coworkers, Tammy, was doing an anal gland expression on a dachshund and it went terribly wrong and it sprayed all over her face.
It'll periodically happen.
Yes,
one will just explode.
But usually,
and just cover you with anal glands.
Usually you'll get it maybe like on your arm or like one little isolated area.
This one was dramatic.
She got drenched. It was like the splash zone at
SeaWorld. It was crazy. It's a little tiny dog. It was all over
her glasses, all over her face, in her hair, on her lips, all over her chest. And she kept going. She was a trooper. She knew it was on her and she just continued on with the anal gland expression because she didn't want to stop. Mm-hmm. And to commemorate the occasion, Dr. B took my phone off the counter.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Knowing I had to move fast.
And
everyone
should
thank me.
Very small window of opportunity to capture this moment in time. So I think that I still probably have it on my phone somewhere, this photo of Tammy covered in anal glands.
Right.
And even though it was taken with my phone, I wanted to make it clear to Tammy that that was not me.
Right. So instead of reaching to help her, this is what I'm criticized for.
The immediate reaction.
My immediate reaction was to photograph the moment.
I mean, what were you going to do to help her?
Really? I mean, if you think about it, I should have had a career as a photojournalist because
your instinct.
I didn't interfere. It's like the prime directive in Star Trek. I simply documented the situation and we now have it for posterity.
Yeah, it's like when there's a drowning like baby cheetah, don't intercept. That's right. You.
Like we're back to David Attenborough now.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Exactly.
Observe.
Yeah.
That's my job at
our
animal hospital.
I mean, I don't know what you were expected to do, like wipe her lips off with that would have been weird.
All right, I'm going to move on to my third and final category and it follows dead or not dead. This is called tumor or not a tumor.
Ooh.
These are the appointments where somebody thinks there's a tumor.
I have one.
But it's not a tumor.
Yeah.
And of course, the number one tumor, not a tumor, is at the base of the penis in a male dog is a bulbous glandis.
Yeah.
The way that we're back to dog sex.
Yep.
The way it works is the dog penetrates the female with a partial erection.
Mm-hmm.
When the dog achieves a full erection, there's a bulb at the base of the penis that swells.
Yeah.
When that swells, it locks the dog in place. We call that a tie, or people call them getting locked in. Well, sometimes dogs get an erection, and so that bulb will swell at the base of the penis. And I cannot tell you the number of appointments I've had where people think it's a tumor.
Yeah.
And my favorite was the woman who said, the dog has a tumor, and it's there every morning, And by the afternoon, the tumor is gone.
Which definitely
was my favorite to explain what was happening anatomically.
I'm sure.
So there's the tumor, not a tumor. That's the penis. Mm-hmm. There's one time only was a tick. The person came in, swore up and down the dog had a tumor. We couldn't find it in the room.
Yeah.
And after much exhaustive searching, and the person had documented exactly where it was, they left. There was nothing to do. They walked out of the hospital. As soon as they drove away, I found their tumor.
It was a tick.
A big fat tick that had just detached from the dog finished after its feeding meal. For 3 days and was just walking around the floor.
That's a good one.
The other one that's probably worth mentioning for people out there is pigmentation on the lips or the tongue.
Oh, yeah.
Black spots on the lip or the tongue. I see that one all the time. Yeah. People always think that's a tumor. If it's not raised, a lot of dogs, as they age, will get black spots on their lips or on their tongue. And people think that that's...
And cats, too.
And cats as well.
They'll get little dark pigments on their lips.
Nipples on a male dog. Guess what? Those aren't tumors.
Yeah.
That's a male dog with nipples.
They have them.
Yes, they have them. The occipital protuberance, that bump on a dog's head, kind of the top of the head, that prominent bump, that's also not a tumor.
Yeah.
The manubrium, the little bump on the bottom of a dog's chest, right where the ribs attach underneath the base of it, there's a little tiny triangle. In some dogs, it's kind of like a little bit of an outie.
Yeah, it's more like prominent.
Another one, common tumor.
Yeah, not a tumor.
And then the sternum, while we're at it, right at the front of the chest.
Yeah.
And a lot of times as dog age, that area will get almost a little fatty deposit because it's any bony prominence a dog has is a potential tumor.
Sure.
So
yeah, especially at the age. Yeah.
It always amuses me when people come in for those appointments and they apologize to me. They say, I'm so sorry. Like they wasted my time.
Aww.
But they didn't waste my time because I'm charging them to tell them that it's not a tumor.
And there's so that.
I feel like this has been a perfectly normal exchange. I have no problem telling you this is not a tumor. You don't have to apologize to me.
Yeah.
I've charged you for this information. And so it's an even exchange.
And they also get peace of mind. In exchange as well. They know it's not a tumor now.
But they're a little bit embarrassed.
Sure.
I do. By the way, I'm very nice. Wouldn't you agree, Sarah? I never make anyone feel bad about not knowing their dog has a penis.
Not any clients.
No, only behind their back.
No. More of like our coworkers when they come to you and you're
that's
like,
merciless.
What about the one that's in the roof of the mouth, the little...
Yes, the incisive papilla.
Yeah, the incisive papilla.
Incisive papilla, just behind the front teeth on a dog and a cat. Mm-hmm. There's a little bump behind the two front teeth. That's it's called the incisive papilla, and it leads to the vomeronasal organ up in the roof of the mouth. And they will, when they get a scent, and cats do this, horses do it as well, dogs don't do this. It's called flaming.
Yeah.
And they will push... They'll kind of lift their head up in this weird motion.
Yeah, they'll like curl their lips.
Yes, and push the scent up into that organ.
Yeah.
But yes, that's not a tumor.
Yeah. I think the dog equivalent is some dogs will like chatter when they get like a good smell.
When they get a weird smell,
I think they do kind of their version
that's
of that.
The equivalent of flaming.
Yeah. Oh, the other one that I see a lot is when a dog gains weight and they get those fat pads.
Oh, yeah.
Up like, along the hips. Right on their hips and people will bring them in and... concerned about them, but they're not. They're just, their dog got fat.
Your dog's fat.
Your dog's got some badonkadonk.
That's right.
Happening.
Which seems to be a difficult thing for people to hear.
Yeah.
In general, I think that we should do a whole nother podcast on that
could
one. The statistic
easily.
Is, was it 60 or 70% of the canine population in the U.S. is overweight?
Probably.
And people don't know it.
Yeah.
They'll tell them their dog is overweight and they're shocked.
Yeah.
They just have no idea that their dog could possibly be overweight.
Yeah.
Because our perception of what a dog should look like is off.
Yes. It has changed. Also, when you're used to seeing your dog every single day and then, nobody weighs their dogs at home. So you don't know.
Right. I guess I'm a little bit judgmental on that one because it's pretty obvious. When your dog looks like a tumor. Tumor, not a tumor. If your entire dog looks like a bloated tick, it's probably your dog is overweight.
And that's not to say, I mean, you know, I let my dog get fat too. So it happens to all of, even the best of us.
You being the best.
She weighed like 32 pounds when I first started working there. And one of the vets was like, she's pretty fluffy. And I'm like, yeah, she's fluffy. And she's like, no, she's fat.
Yeah, but 32 pounds, what did you get her down to?
25.
Okay. So she's was overweight, but it's not. There's some dogs I'll see.
Yeah.
Like, oh my, it's not always, but very frequently a lab.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my lab, he weighs 115 pounds.
He's a big boy.
Like, yeah, he should weigh 80.
Yeah.
Wait, what? 35 pounds? Your dog needs to lose 35 pounds. They're just utter shock.
I also got one time that was bony prominences that was a series of masses in a row along the dog's back. And I was able to diagnose that one pretty easily, even though I'm not a vet, and it was the dog's spine. Yeah, became more prominent because she had muscle wasting as she aged.
Yeah, my other favorite appointment was the limping dog that wasn't using its leg, and its leg was hooked through its collar on its neck.
No.
And so I unhooked the collar and hooked it. That one I didn't charge for.
Yeah, that's good.
I was like, you can go. We're good. I can't even charge you for this one. Oh, I just unhooked the collar and hooked it again, and the dog's leg freed itself, and he didn't limp anymore.
Yeah. So you're such a good vet. Were there any other of the tumor ones? I can't think of it. The incisive papilla was a good one.
That is Papas Fritas you're hearing with the song Hey Hey You Say. Thank you, Minty Fresh Label. Thank you, of course, Sarah Wheeler, for being on and sharing your expertise. Thank you to my lovely wife, Terry. And now one final word from my 16-year-old daughter, Amira.
Don't listen to anything he says.
I agree.